Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. It's finally Friday, September 8th. I'm Stephen Overly. Here's your quick tech news download. The G7 countries are working to draft an international code of conduct for artificial intelligence, and it could be presented to leaders as soon as November. Now, these will be voluntary commitments, meaning there's no real way to enforce them. But the idea is to prevent AI from being used to harm society by implementing cybersecurity standards and other safety measures. The G7 announcement marks a step toward Western democracies actually aligning their approaches to AI. But getting those countries to really implement consistent tech regulation has proven difficult many times before. Of course, the G7 does not include China. And cybersecurity researchers say Beijing is already using AI-generated content to meddle in U.S. politics. Researchers at Microsoft warned on Thursday that online groups affiliated with the Chinese government are using AI to create divisive images that exacerbate political tensions on issues like gun violence and criticize U.S. politicians. This kind of thing has been done before by China, Russia, and other U.S. adversaries trying to meddle in our elections. Now, they're starting to use AI to make that online material more sophisticated, and researchers say it remains to be seen how big of a problem it could become. And the AFL-CIO has often been labor's voice in the room as Washington grapples with AI. This summer, its leaders have been part of meetings with White House advisors and a roundtable with Vice President Kamala Harris. And next week, the AFL-CIO's president will join tech executives and civil society advocates at a big AI forum being organized by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. U.S. workers have growing concerns about AI, including the technology being used for surveillance in the workplace and ultimately taking their jobs. But on today's Politico Tech, the director of the AFL-CIO Technology Institute tells me the labor movement isn't anti-tech.
My name is Amanda Ballantyne, and I'm the executive director of the AFL-CIO Technology Institute.
Amanda Ballantyne says labor unions agree there are many ways that AI can improve productivity and working conditions. But whether those advancements will come at the expense of workers, that's the question. That Technology Institute was created about 2 years ago. Can you just sort of tell me what exactly is the role of the Institute?
The leadership of the AFL-CIO, both the current and past leadership, wanted to create a separate dedicated space that could be just really focused on learning about the issues that workers face with technology implementation and engaging with workers and their unions about how to strategize to make sure that new technology works for working people.
It almost, when I first heard about the Technology Institute, I almost got the impression it was kind of a boot camp of sorts for labor organizers to learn about technology and AI and maybe these technologies they weren't exposed. Would you say that's right?
Well, we do have a significant educational role, but I think the interesting thing about working at the AFL-CIO, which is a federation of 60 international labor unions, is that many of our unions understand technology really by talking to their members who are everyday experts in technology. And so I would say that we do a lot of connecting of unions and union members with experts and companies that are developing new technologies. And part of that is to create convening spaces to share and develop strategies.
I had this thought myself covering AI, particularly in the context of the labor strikes, where we're now talking about technology coming in and really shaking up creative industries in a way that it has been shaking up like more labor-intensive manufacturing-based industries, right, through automation. And the work you do doing that connecting, have you seen like AI sort of bring together unlikely allies or unexpected allies because they're two very different industries grappling with this technology?
Absolutely. I think there are a lot of cross-cutting issues. It's hard to talk about artificial intelligence because there are so many different use cases in so many different industries. And so we've started to focus really on this idea of machine usefulness and really focusing on like a set of principles that center workers and worker voice in technology and using that as a sort of gauge to understand you know, what's good and what's bad about certain technologies. And so there has been really interesting conversation among unions in the creative industry who I think have been, like SAG-AFTRA has been on the cutting edge of AI and digital technologies for 25 years. There's like, they're a serious leader on these issues because their members are really frontline. I think the manufacturing unions have played a big role. The building trades have an incredible approach to technology implementation and training workers and moving them through. And so, you know, service work in general will be more and more impacted. But what we see is a lot of sort of coming together and sharing of strategies around how to bargain effective technology policies in the context of collective bargaining, and then how to start thinking about engaging in policy and regulatory conversations about AI in a way that reflects fundamental principles of ensuring that we're protecting workers and worker voice.
I think there might be a perception that the labor movement would be or is anti-AI, or that these, it's just incompatible with the broader objectives of the labor movement. It sounds like when you talk about things like machine usefulness, you do see some pros.
Oh, yeah. I would say that we're not anti-technology. We're pro-worker. And so there are definitely...
And those aren't incompatible.
They are not incompatible. There are definitely very negative uses of technology that impact workers in negative ways. There are certainly public policy options that we can build to help workers transition to new opportunities if their jobs are automated. And what we're trying to do is build both a policy environment and a bargaining environment that makes sure that the big gains that will happen in the economy because of this technology don't just go to big tech firms, that workers are also sharing in those gains. Because frankly, it's public money that was behind a lot of the initial research and design to create the technology, right? This is a shared enterprise. And I think most people in the labor movement see that. The challenge is like, and I think especially with like some of the large language models that are rolling out now, they're rolling out without guardrails. We're sort of living in this live action experiment. And macroeconomic analysts will say, hey, you know, ultimately AI is going to make the economy more productive and there will be good jobs and better jobs created by it. And that's true. I believe it. But I think there's a lag time that has real human consequences for the people whose lives are going to be very disruptive by employers who are experimenting with technologies like this and by the sort of like unregulated implementation of this technology, right? So we're not opposed to it, but we definitely think that given the scope of what AI is capable of doing, we really need to have serious conversations about its impact on society, on workers, on the economy, on our democracy. And that's where we're focused.
We'll be right back. You know, I know, for instance, the White House is putting more focus now on AI, and they've brought labor groups into that discussion, including the AFL-CIO, which, you know, I know has participated in at least a few of the meetings the White House has had. What are you telling them in those meetings needs to be done on this?
So we have a range of recommendations that we're making. The first sort of major piece that we're looking at is artificial intelligence and digital technologies and worker surveillance and privacy issues. A lot of what we've suggested is actually kind of drawn from our bargaining strategies and our understanding of civil rights and civil liberties law, and just making sure that worker rights can be enforced in a digital environment, frankly, because I think that's a challenge. And so a big piece of the work that we've done, there's been a collaboration among our Department of Professional Employees with SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild and other entertainment industry unions really focused on intellectual property, which particularly with generative AI, but also with predictive AI, is a very significant set of issues and issues that need to be dealt with globally. And those relate directly to pocketbook issues of people in the creative industry who make their money from royalties. And then we are also working really closely on a set of civil rights and civil liberties issues that we think are fundamental to democracy and ensuring that we have trustworthy and reliable AI that preserves democracy and doesn't impact the social fabric in really negative ways that we've seen in other places around the world, and certainly also in some of our own elections.
And what's at the top of that list in terms of ways that AI could be used to undermine worker privacy, for instance? What is the like core concern there that AI will be used for surveillance or used to sort of micromanage productivity of workers in some way?
Well, I think it's both things. So surveillance is something that unions have been dealing with for many, many years since the advent of video cameras, right? So surveillance isn't new. But what is new about the surveillance that employers are capable of now with AI, you know, in terms of like wearable technologies and video-enabled technologies that can track every single move that a worker makes, timing how long they're in the bathroom, timing how many steps it takes them to deliver a package to a certain spot on a conveyor belt. We've seen an increase in workplace injuries. We've seen increase in mental health issues. I mean, really serious kind of, I think, health and safety regulations, but also a violation of privacy on the job. And for unions, particularly, we're interested in the rights that workers have to get together and, you know, have concerted protected activities and organize and form labor unions. And we've seen the use of digital technologies in tracking and surveilling workers, both for productivity monitoring, but also, you know, there have been plenty of reports of these types of activities, you know, tracking union activities. It's really like surveillance on steroids. When we start to think about privacy, I think there's a real issue with black box technology, workers not even being aware of the types of performance monitoring that is being done, whether it's sort of back of the queue keystroke monitoring, whether an employer is asking them to download an app on their phone that then is tracking where they go, what they do, and then the potential use and marketing of the data that's collected to third parties without workers' knowledge, right?
Right.
I mean, these are broad civil rights and civil liberties concerns, but they also have very specific workplace implications.
I think that's an interesting point because transparency, often around AI, but really all of these technologies, transparency sort of is a recurring theme for us here on the podcast. You know, one question I'm actually curious to put to you now that I think about it, because I've been asking around on this, and I've really not gotten a good answer. Before hosting this podcast, I was a trade reporter, and you know, I've written about trade adjustment assistance, which, for those who don't know, is sort of a longstanding, if flawed, government program, essentially to help, you know, workers who are displaced by globalization and global trade. I've been wondering if we have a need for and a similar program for workers displaced by AI.
Oh, yeah. But I think maybe a more effective and more universal program. You know, in Europe, they call what you're talking about a just transition strategy. And it's really bargained, you know, so unions are working to bargain shifts in employment status to make sure that workers are getting the upskilling and training that they need and that there are new jobs created where they live that are sort of equivalent to the jobs that they're losing. And, you know, so there are places in the world that actually do this well through public policy. And there are unions in the United States who are able to do this well through bargaining strategies. But it's challenging because labor law in the United States does not favor labor unions. And so I think that the questions are, how do we make sure that there's a real worker-centered training approach to the implementation of artificial intelligence that is supporting labor management partnership and that is really focused on helping workers navigate shifts, which can mean training and upskilling, but it has to be more than that. It has to be pathways to good jobs created in the places where people live. One of the things we learned from the export of the entire manufacturing industry, well, most of the manufacturing industry through global trade, which is kind of where you started this conversation, is that it's really hard for people to move to find new work when they lose a good job. So they end up getting two or three, maybe not so good jobs to replace the good job that they had. And that kind of degradation of job quality for people creates a lot of social problems and I think a lot of problems of polarization in our democracy. Getting this transition to AI and digital technologies right strengthens our democracy and strengthens shared prosperity. But getting it wrong could put us in an even more polarized position than we're in today.
Right. We've seen a lot of sort of disruptive moments for the labor movement, globalization, trade, waves of automation. How would you characterize the moment we're in now with AI kind of in that context?
So I think that, you know, when I talk about artificial intelligence, like within the labor movement, I compare it to global trade in terms of the length of and the duration of time that it's going to take to build a regulatory system that can make it work for working people. I think it is a generational challenge. to develop an implementation strategy that creates prosperity for everyone. Really, I do. And I think that the good thing about that time is that when you see headlines, you think all of this is going to happen immediately. I actually think that companies have big questions about how to implement AI effectively. I think certainly labor unions do. I think that there's a lot of work to be done to develop effective worker and workforce training programs. And so the regulatory work we're seeing right now is a very good sign, but I think it's going to be an ongoing conversation. And I think it's going to be, there will be some big general issues, and then there will be some issues that are very specific to different sectors, right? So I think the scope of the challenge is big, and it's going to be a long-term set of strategies to get us there. But I also think that, again, having an administration that's interested in building collaboration between business and labor to accomplish this well is a really great thing, you know, and I think we have that in the Biden administration.
I wonder, what's the biggest question that you're hearing from labor organizers on AI that you just can't answer?
There are so many. I mean, what I'm hearing most from the labor movement is just a real deep need. And I think this is a general need for everybody, for like education. What is this technology? How does it work? And what's it going to do in my sector? What are the things that I need to be concerned about? So what can and can't we answer? I think we can't answer questions about timing. We can't answer questions yet about what are the industries that might face full-on automation versus what are the industries where it's really more of a job quality or job degradation or de-skilling issue that we have to focus on. But I do think in the next year or so, some of those answers will become more clear.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us on Politico Tech. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. This was really fun.
That's all for Politico Tech this week. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our senior producer is Annie Reese. Our editors are Steve Heuser and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. I'll meet you back here on Monday.